Remarkable similarity of Dimitri and Lexius. See the same shimmer of the skin, the same long, full hair, uncommonly long and proudly long, falling to the shoulders. And both seem to me great gods of Eros, surpassing all ordinary beings in their pursuit of joys that make the rest of us cowards. The queen put her right arm around Dimitri, and with her left hand she touched his small breasts reverently, and gingerly she touched his nipples. The blush was burning bright in his face as he looked down at her. The king and Lexius were now bound together in a hopeless embrace as the king drank the milk lustily and hungrily. I turned away. I couldn't contain myself. It was not only the desire thrashing inside of me like an angry serpent locked in the prison of my body. It was my soul, my heaving soul. Magnificent. I went past the bed and towards the window. I sought the air, parting the heavy curtains, and I looked up into the night, the shining night of the half moon and its drift of faint stars, and I sighed. Behind me, I heard the queen's voice. "And all men who serve must take this form," she asked.
"Yes, my queen," said Dimitri, "and how they throb with every wave of desire."
"Oh, but you see, I know," said the queen, "for we share this, don't we?"
"Yes," he said. "Oh, yes."
I lay my head against the stone arch and felt the warm, caressing breeze of the night, my eyes closed and my mind filled with vivid images. All men who serve. The heavy window curtains had fallen shut behind me, yet I could hear the creak of the bed, of its boards, and I heard the sudden, muffled, rhythmic cadence. Through the tiny seam between the draperies, I peered and saw Lexius on his knees, his back to the king, his hands out to the coffered headboard of the bed, as the king rode him, the king's hands clutching at Lexius's breasts, his hands squeezing them with greater abandon than he might ever enjoy the breasts of a woman. A god and a god. I turned back to the night, alone in my closet of velvet hangings. The harsh and driving rhythms of the bed came suddenly to the pinnacle in a great explosion of cries and groans. Then silence, and in the silence distantly, the queen's sweet and subtle sighs, and with them those soft, shuffling, indefinable sounds that meant another species of lovemaking. It seemed that in the very midst of this, Dimitri was weeping. In a ragged, fervent whisper, he said,
"My secret is yours, yours, yours."
I slipped from behind the curtain, and cleaving to the margins of the room, I went to the door. I looked back. The king lay as if in a dead sleep. The queen and Dimitri were a hopeless and tangled shape on the floor in the shadows before the leaping flames of the fire. How dare I leave without permission? And yet I had to leave, had to go. I opened the door and ran down the passage, and when I reached my room, I fell down on the bed, my face in the pillow. Severin had come. Severin begged to know what I might want. Severin took off my slippers. "Go," I said. I was as one blinded by a fierce new light and could not just now look upon the old things, which had once seemed so wondrous.
Chapter 17. Beauty, a Festival of Masks. Beauty waited. She sat by the fire. The night outside was mild and lovely, as it always was. But here in this vast chamber, the stone walls were damp, and the warmth of the fire, as well as its dancing light, soothed her. Dimitri and Alexei sat with her in chairs opposite. Beside her sat Rosalind, her beloved Rosalind, buxom, pretty, and practical and truthful. Her slaves Beauty had sent away, including her devoted Becca, whom she already missed. But this was a time for privacy with her privy council. "I need them now so very much," thought Beauty. Her farewells to Eva had been brief, with unbridled tears and embraces. Eva had said again, as she had so many times before, I must go, Your Majesty. How can I not? How can I not go and see for myself? Remember, Beauty had said, our guards will be with you every step of the way and shall not leave you in Kaharanka until you yourself dismiss them. You can always return. The cohort will remain outside the walls waiting for your word. Beauty had cried, but finally given her blessing. She had embraced Lexius for the last time as well. And as she looked into the flames, she thought not of Eva or Lexius, but of the future. How am I to rule without her? Without the one who made all my designs into reality? The one who carried out with vigor those proposals that were dreams to me? Dimitri, Alexei, and Rosalind had assured her that they would take the place of Eva. Elena was committed to this as well. It was Elena who had presided over the evening banquet, receiving the new guests and showing her generous appreciation of all the special entertainments. The slaves of the realm were at peace. No one could guess how thoroughly Lady Eva had constructed the world in which they suffered and loved and thrived. But Beauty knew. At last the king came into the room. He waved for all to remain as they were. No bows now in private chambers. Well, I did my best, he said. He walked to the great fireplace and rested his hand against the stone, looking down into the flames. I begged her not to go. I reminded her of all the inevitable perils. I assured her that I would seek to rescue her if I received the message. But how can any of us know what is to become of her? And I cannot raise an army to cross such vast seas. I'm afraid for her.
Have they gone?
Yes, said the king. I implored them to go tonight. I implored them not to let another sun rise on the same talk, the same pleading, the same tensions. They won't go far tonight, but they're gone, once and for all. It's been the most trying week since we came. I'm glad it's over.
Yes, and you did all that you could, said Beauty. She looked at him, marveling at how untroubled he was, how certain that the future would not be changed by Eva's going, his certainty that the kingdom had a great destiny as before, and that what Eva had chosen to do could only hurt Eva. But this was the way with Laurent. Beauty knew this. Yes, he loved with a special love, but he was not to be undone by Eva. As he had said, Eva's work had been completed. It was Beauty who had introduced the greatest innovations, and the staff which now presided over all the kingdom was as dedicated and efficient as always.
Now, Beauty, he said, turning to her, I won't hear any more of grief or doubt. You are to give up at once on this mad idea that Bella Vulton will suffer without Eva. The kingdom is too strong for such a thought, and the love of our subjects for you is too great for you to doubt it. Not another word on this.
Yes, my lord, said Beauty.
She gave him her most knowing and taunting smile. It was the smile she always reserved for such moments, when he was dictating to her in the presence of others as to how she must feel in her soul. But she loved him so much and so unwaveringly. He shook his head and gave back his own reproving smile, and then he bent to kiss her. Queen of my heart, he said. In a matter of months, you will wonder why you ever feared the loss of Eva. He rose to his full height again and stretched, and then shook himself all over. He looked at Dimitri and Alexei. Who wishes to agree with me? He asked. He was to some extent teasing, but it was like all teasing in that there was a truth to it. I agree completely, sire, said Alexei. What this means is more meetings, more councils, a few more appointments, and that is all. We shall miss her, but she leaves no ragged hole in the fabric.
The fabric has already begun to mend. Yes, that is what I wanted to hear, said the king. Now, if there is nothing more for me to do here, I'll go down and join Elena.
And with one more kiss for Beauty, he was gone, leaving the room with the same easy stride with which he'd entered it. How long, thought Beauty, shall I keep them here, my beloved companions? Is it really their task to comfort me when I'm beyond comforting? She had heard their many predictions and assurances all week long.
No one expects you ever to pretend to feel that which you do not feel,
Alexei had said over and over again, and Dmitri, more reticent but of the same mind, had said more than once,
You rule with perfect grace. That is what matters.
So why did it matter so to Beauty that she could not experience raptures when she exacted alluring shudders and whimpers from her charges? Why did it trouble her that from the throne she did not know the exaltation she had known when she had been a naked slave of others? It was unseemly to her to call some cruel and demanding master to her private rooms, as Laurent had done so easily with Eva. She did not want that. The inner shame of being the queen, naked and on her knees before another. Indeed, what she knew in Alexei's arms and in Dmitri's arms was rapture beyond imagining. It was different, that was all. Different, their caressing, their play, their shared enjoyment of the slaves she kept for her own amusement. So what was lacking? She resolved she would not again complain of losing Eva. I have a thought, she said, an idea, something I would like to see, something special, not for every night, but for one very special night.
Ah, I can't wait to hear it, said Alexei.
Your wish is my command, said Rosalind. Ah, she loved the soft, informal voices of those who trusted her and were close to her. We have talked a lot of the discipline of the mask, she said. Explain how it goes just now with those who ask for it.
Well, said Dmitri, there are five so far, three lords and two ladies, and they wait, as before, for your permission. I've spoken to each of them, as you ordered, and I think they are apt candidates, all in fit condition, comely, and with an undeniable aptitude for service.
You want to tell me now who they are, or must I drag it out of you? Said Beauty, but not in a mean voice. No, never in a mean voice. She made a little gesture of welcome with both hands as she smiled at Dmitri.
Lady Juliana, said Dmitri. How long ago did she return? It's been 6 months, I think.
Beauty nodded. Lady Juliana? What a fearsome creature she was when I first came here, and such a friend to the late queen. But you know, she did originally come here as a royal slave, and as a royal slave she was sent down to the village for punishment, only to be elevated and made a lady-in-waiting by the queen. And that is what she is with me. Dmitri nodded.
Alexei had his usual slightly mocking and knowing smile. He certainly hadn't forgotten the beautiful blonde Juliana who'd driven Beauty on the bridal path the first time long ago.
In those days, Juliana had worn her hair in long, thick braids threaded with pearls. And now she wore a great braid encircling her head, behind which her blonde hair was exquisitely coiffed in waves. And the old threads of pearls were there, and her face was as pretty as ever, and her voice just as lilting. So she wants to take the discipline of the mask, said Beauty. Prince Roger will find that most interesting, as they were once slave runaways together, and she was elevated to the court without him. Prince Roger was fast friends with Prince Richard in the village.
Yes, Roger is aware, and he does find it amusing, said Dmitri. And they've spoken of it as openly as you and I are speaking now. She knows what she wants, my queen. I have no doubt that she'll do well with the discipline of the mask. What we need are rituals, how to anoint these disciples of the mask, and what rules to apply to their tribulations.
I have many ideas, said Rosalind. I say we need a special day on which such persons can appear naked and masked before the court to be anointed.
I like that idea, said the queen, as it was in the old days with Midsummer Night.
Yes, and we might have more than one such festival, perhaps 3 or 4 a year, said Dimitri, perhaps 1 every 2 months. We could see how it goes as more of the old royal slaves return to the kingdom. Another is Princess Lynette, said Dimitri. You might not remember her, my queen. She ran away and was never caught. Well, she's been back more than once. The queen pardoned her and welcomed her to court 10 years ago.
I remember her, said Beauty. And well she should, since she had received her with Laurent. But it was quite impossible to remember all the names and faces of those they received nightly. The Lord Chamberlain had his lists, his proper titles, his little histories, and that was a good thing, for Beauty could not recall right now just what precious Princess Lynette looked like. But you know who she is, don't you? She said to Alexei. He laughed.
I certainly do.
Lynette had featured heavily in a long story Alexei had once confided to Beauty, of how he had been broken and taught to please the queen. Blonde hair, blue eyes. Yes, that much Beauty now remembered.
I would say she knows what she wants, too, said Alexei. We've both spoken with her and Lady Juliana. They're ready for the mask. They're asking only for a limited time, say 6 months of slavery, and then a chance to renew their vows, like all the other slaves.
Beauty nodded.
Now for the 3 lords, said Dimitri. The first is Prince Gerard, the blonde one, who was a pony in the stables after you left, and he knows perfectly well what he wants. No doubt about him. He understands that once he dons the mask, he will have no choice in the matter of where he's made to serve. But he wants to be a pony again. He's fit enough, and frankly, handsomer than he was in the old days. And then there is a young duke, Claudio, only lately come to the kingdom. He is very innocent, but he's spent the last 8 months here and knows well what all this means.
Yes, Claudio, said Beauty, of the auburn hair, raw-boned, tall, but utterly enchanting. We've had him at the royal table countless times. He keeps the most piquant little slave, Isabella.
Yes, well, I'm for letting him do it, said Dimitri. In fact, I'd love to acquaint him with the rigors of the village myself, as I did Stefan. Now, as for the third, well, this is young Lord Lysius, grandnephew of the old king at our border, and I think he is being hasty. He does not realize what it means to be anointed a slave. He thinks he does, but, well, all I can say is he does not. He's a dreamer, a poet, in love with the kingdom, but not ready to serve others. I agree, said Alexei. Lord Lysius should be refused. And if we do have 4 ceremonies of acceptance a year, well, he could be put off for a certain period of months, with the promise that he might apply again.
Seems you have it well in hand, Beauty said. And she believed it. But she was not so sure young Lord Lysius should be refused. She knew him. He was a lad of sensitivity and great imagination. He knew what the slaves felt as he punished them. Why shouldn't he take the mask? But she would press this later. But what special night, what festival should be the occasion for these presentations? Asked Rosalind. A festival of masks, said Beauty. I have been thinking of it for some time. A great and beautiful festival of masks when all the court shall mask as well, and all free men and women of the kingdom.
Ah, lovely, said Rosalind.
A great night of masked dancing and frolicking, when all wearing clothes shall wear masks to embolden them to celebrate the freedom of Belavolten, said Beauty. Something like the old celebrations of Perkta at midwinter. She smiled to think of Perkta, the old goddess of spinning. And it had been a spinning wheel that had been Beauty's long ago undoing, when as a girl of 15 she pricked her finger on a spindle and fell asleep for 100 years. But what did Perkta mean for all the world? Didn't matter. She was seeing a more complex and wholly original festival. And in our festival, said Beauty, all naked slaves of the village and of the court and of the kingdom may frolic as well in the castle gardens for that one night, free of restraint and punishment, to dance and drink and embrace one another along with their masked lords and ladies. We shall all celebrate the freedom of the kingdom.
A form of Saturnalia, said Dimitri.
The only naked slaves who shall wear masks on that night, said Beauty, will be the 5 who are accepted for the discipline of the mask, and they shall wear their masks thereafter for 6 months, at which time they may remove them and return to court or become slaves indefinitely.
Perfect, said Alexei. Simply perfect. And that settles it, said Dimitri. Stefan should wear his mask for 6 months from the time he put it on.
That is my wish, said Beauty. And as for young Lord Lysius, the decision is his also.
Ah, this will be wonderful fun, said Rosalind.
But what great ritual will lie at the center of it? I'm coming to that, said Beauty. You and Dimitri, you were both on the ship with me and Tristan and Laurent as we sailed to the Sultanate. Do you remember an early feast on board the ship in which Tristan and I were gilded lovers?
I remember it vividly, said Dimitri.
So do I, said Rosalind, and we spoke of it often afterwards. We saw other such reenactments in the Sultanate. It had no great meaning for them, but I am seeing what meaning it might have for us. I was painted in gold, said Beauty, and surrounded with fruit dipped in honey, and my body filled with such, and I was laid out on a great bier, as if I were a feast myself, and then Tristan came and ate the fruits with which I was filled and coupled with me.
I can see this, said Alexei.
Yes, said Beauty. But now imagine it with our gracious king agreeing on that night to remove all his clothes and adornments, except for his mask, so that he, of his own will, couples with the gilded female slave offered to him on a great platter. Imagine it, the great ceremonial coupling of king and kingdom.
Oh, so splendid, said Alexei. The marriage of king and kingdom. Yes, this would be a great and sacred moment.
I can hear the harps and the drums, said Beauty, and see His Majesty rising from the throne at the sacred moment and stripping off his fine clothes with only his mask left. Perhaps a mask that has the horns of Pan or the horns of a goat. For he would be the goat god, the god of wine, the god of fertility, the god of rampant celebration. And imagine him approaching the bier on which the gilded female slave is offered to him.
Breathtaking, said Alexei.
Yes, said Beauty. She would be all painted in gold, and she too would be masked, because she represents all slaves of the kingdom, all slaves, not her single solitary self, as the king couples with her.
Yes, said Dimitri. The king should eat the fruit from inside her and then take her. Ah, the great wedding of all who rule with all who serve. But how shall you figure in it, Beauty? Said Alexei.
He had forgotten to address her as queen or my lady, but Beauty didn't care. If anything, she wanted all of them to be less formal.
Well, the queen must watch from behind her mask on the throne,
I would imagine, she said. She had chosen her words carefully, but she was thinking of something else entirely.
Do you think our beloved king will do it? Asked Dimitri.
Beauty laughed.
If ever there was a king who would, it is Laurent. I can see it now. See his ruddy flesh and the gilded flesh of the prone slave, and see the two masks, his decorated with horns, yes, and hers perhaps with green leaves and purple grapes painted on the leather, and the whole platter, the whole beer, decorated with such bacchanalian foliage. A moment of silence passed.
My queen, you keep dreaming the dreams, said Rosalind. We can easily make of this a perfect reality. I'm ready now to make drawings, the plans. We will need many more musicians, vats of the finest wine, and all the naked slaves shall be encouraged to dance on that night with utter abandon.
All shall dance with utter abandon, said Beauty.
But the masked girl, the slave chosen to represent the kingdom, Dimitri pressed, who should she be? Someone very special. I mean, this should be a very special honor, to be chosen for such a ceremonial wedding. Should she remove her mask afterwards?
Remove her mask? Why should she? For she is everyone, said Beauty. And I do have someone very special in mind. But you must let me ponder that now on my own for a while. Her eyes drifted, and she saw Dimitri looking up dreamily as he envisioned this. But Alexei's eyes were fixed quietly on Beauty, and Rosalind, too, regarded her with a secret smile, gazing at her out of the corner of her eyes.
Announce the feast. The night does not matter. We make a new custom here, and shall hold such a feast as soon as we can. And we shall make the date a memorial. Announce it shall be the night when the accepted disciples of the mask will step forward and be taken off by Prince Dimitri at the end of the night to the village to begin their servitude. Perhaps they shall be ceremonially bound for their journey. Make a great raised dais for this great platter or banquet table on which the slave girl shall lie after she is brought in, and make sure the dais for the king and queen is above it, and leave the king to me. I will put it to him so that he will do it. And the queen shall preside as always from her throne as the ceremony is accomplished. For an hour they spoke of nothing else but the feast, which now had the title The First Festival of Masks. And Rosalind at Beauty's writing table scribbled down many ideas and drew some scant pictures. At last, Beauty dismissed them all except for Dimitri. The bolt was thrown on the door, and in the warm, shadowy chamber, they both removed their garments. How marvelous to shed the heavy trappings of royal attire and stand naked on the bare floor. The size of Dimitri's nude breasts astonished Beauty. He seemed as accustomed to them as Lexius had been to his, and he showed not the slightest shame as Beauty drank him in with her eyes. "And this is only 1 week on the elixir?" she asked.
"Yes," said Dimitri, gazing at her with the serene face of a statue. "And Lexius left us plenty enough for many to imbibe if they wish. Matthew has no difficulty with the formula. He will soon be able to make as much as we like."
"And how do they feel to you?" Beauty asked, though she wanted above all to know how they might feel to her.
"Tender," he said. "Firm, but exquisitely sensitive."
"In time we shall talk of this," said Beauty, "of those who might want to drink this potion. For now, you do as you wish." She was so glad that Eva had not asked to take her alchemist, Matthew, with her, and that he remained still in his workshop producing potions and pastes, and lotions and perfumes. Matthew was quiet and solitary by nature, and took no direct interest in slaves, though he used them all the time in his experiments. It was amusing, in fact, to watch him feeding a passion potion to a female slave, and then feeling her soft little pubic patch for the telltale moisture. He took note of this as a tailor might of a measurement, and wrote it down directly. He never so much as glanced at the faces of the slaves strapped to his walls as he went about his work. Beauty drew near to Dimitri and stroked his breasts. She could resist no longer. His cock came to life immediately. Dimitri thrilled and intrigued her as no other being in the kingdom just now, and he seemed to have grown in grace since he'd taken more of the potion that made him the great enigmatic god who stood before her. She led him to the bed and they lay down together.
"Ah, this is so splendid," she said, lying beside him, facing him, studying him, stroking him. "If I could only grow a cock, only for a night."
She was lost in his eerie beauty.
"My queen, you have no need of one," he said. "You are as much a man and woman as I am a man and woman."
They pressed close to each other, their breasts crushed against one another, and he kissed her lips tenderly. She felt a throbbing in her breasts and in the little chamber between her legs. She felt herself melting against him, against his silky skin.
"And you, you alone behold me as I truly am," he said to her in a voice rich with feeling that deeply touched her. "You and you alone see and feel these ornaments that make me doubly your conquest."
"I alone?" she asked in a low, purring whisper. "Not even Stefan sees these luscious gifts."
"Stefan wouldn't want to see them," said Dimitri. "And no, he shall never. For now, they belong to you."
Beauty pressed Dimitri down on the pillow so that he lay on his back. She straddled him, and rising up received his cock gratefully. Such a divine sensation, that of the hard cock going deep into her, widening her vaginal mouth, rubbing harshly against her burning clitoris. Reaching for his breasts as he reached for hers, she moved up and down on the wet shaft of his cock, slowly finding the inevitable rhythm. Her eyes closed, her hands kneading his breasts cruelly, her thoughts filled with flaming bits and pieces of dreams. She came, crying Dimitri's name. She felt the hot semen inside her. Tumbling down beside him, she fell into an easy sleep, now and then nuzzling into his breasts or feeling his lips graze her forehead and cheeks gently. Suddenly, an unfamiliar impulse came over her. She motioned for him to turn over on his face. Drowsily and wordlessly, he obeyed, his eyes closed, his face serene and soft against the pillow. She explored his hard, firm back, his small waist, and the bones of his narrow hips. And then her fingers stroked his soft backside and pried apart the cheeks of his bottom so that she could see the pink little anus there. He offered no resistance to her. Seldom had she ever examined this part of a man, which so delighted others in the kingdom. Now she studied the tiny wrinkled mouth. She pushed at it with her fingers. Dimitri was awake, she was sure of it, but lay silent and still. She felt the desire to find a wand with a phallus on the end of it, the kind used for driving pets in the garden. She had never used those wands. She'd always pulled her little puppy, Bran, along by a leash. But she thought now that next time she would examine Bran's nether endowments with greater interest. And she would drive him with such a wand, and maybe Dimitri as well when the mood came over her. Yes, she might drive Dimitri around this room, and it would be interesting to see how his backside looked at the end of the wand, how his shoulders would look, and his face. Yes, his face, when he was made to crawl about in this manner for her. He would love it. She knew that he would. She lay back down to sleep once more. In the quiet bedroom with only the flames of the fire for light, the king's step sounded. The door shut. She opened her eyes to see his face as he raised his eyebrows and looked down on Dmitri. The prince awoke and dutifully left the bed, snatching up his clothes before disappearing into the antechamber.
"How now, my little damsel," said the king. "I'll drive that princeling from your mind with every thrust."
He tore off his garments and let them drop. Then he mounted her, and she felt the great familiar crush of his cock inside of her. And looking up in her delirium, she saw the handsome face that had guided her waking life for decades, and guided it still. "King of my heart," she said. Falling away from him, she pushed her face into the pillow.
"And this little queenly bottom is still all mine," said Laurent softly in her ear. "No one else has whipped or spanked it."
She felt his large, warm hand closing over her buttocks.
"No, my lord," she whispered sleepily in reply, "and I do not think anyone else ever will.
But if you wish..."
She smiled. She was so sleepy. He had never said this before.
"If you wish, you know, it is your prerogative."
"Hush, my lord," she said. "I do not wish. Go to sleep."
Hours later, Beauty fell into a vivid dream. The great fairy-wise woman, Titania of Mataquin, was talking to her, and they sat together in a great grove of multicolored flowers and gentle green willows by a small, sparkling stream. This was the Fairy Queen's realm. Titania spoke to her.
"Ah, but don't you see? The laws that bind you are yours to change to your own purposes. You are mistress and slave of all the realm."
Chapter 18. Beauty, the Marriage of the King and the Kingdom. It was the most glorious night in Bellevalton that she had ever experienced. The garden was thronged with masked revelers in festive attire, and naked slaves dancing together in circles both great and small, and in pairs and in chains as they rushed singing through the many scattered little pavilions and tables. Every fountain had been emptied, cleaned, and filled with the finest wine, and vats of wine were everywhere positioned for those who would dip their goblets or tankards. The spectacle of the masked people of the village and the court was splendid and exciting even beyond imagining, and the musicians from far and wide played the gayest and lustiest tunes and dances. Never had there been so many torches, lanterns strung in the limbs of the trees, or so many candelabra burning against the walls, or lamps shining on the countless tables. In the spirit of a Saturnalia, citizens served themselves from the huge tables laid out with every meat and fruit and delicacy, and the slaves feasted as well. The grooms and attendants on duty wore masks, though they worked always to see that tables remained clean, that all had what they needed, that nothing ran short as the feast continued hour after hour. Yet even they partook of the delicious food and wine, and had their turns at dancing and singing. Beauty sat back, comfortable in the immense gilded throne, looking down on the dais prepared for the great marriage ceremony directly before her. All the court could see the dais, and see the masked king and queen as they smiled down on their subjects. The king had danced over and over, and the king and queen many times, and the queen with her beloved Alexei and Dmitri. The thumping of drums, the peal of pipes, and the strumming of lutes and lyres filled the air, along with the cries of the excited merrymakers. No slave pets tonight. No slaves bound to crosses, no slaves driven on the bridal path, only the shared gaiety of all the realm who gave no thought to tomorrow. It was now the 11th hour. Very soon the gilded maiden would be brought in, and the king would rise to be the lord of the grape, the lord of the fields, the lord of plenty and celebration, and take his bride in his arms for the great ceremony. Of course he had been willing to do what his beloved beauty had asked of him. What did it mean for him to strip naked and perform before his worshipful subjects? He had said at once, "What a great pleasure and what a small request." Beauty had loved him for it. Behind his ornate gold mask with its slanted eyes and horns, he appeared deliciously frightening to her. As for her mask, it was large and concealing as was his, and she wondered if her mouth seemed as lush and inviting to Laurent as his did to her. Ah, what masks did to faces and to souls! Rosalind appeared before the banquet table and nodded. Beauty knew her by her hair as well as her brilliant purple gown, and by her demeanor, of course, as she knew many in spite of their masks. She rose at the signal and slipped away. "To refresh myself, my lord," she said, "I'll be back momentarily. And I want to see the gilded maiden, that all is as I want it to be." She and Rosalind rushed through the shifting crowds, Rosalind leading the way, clasping Beauty's hand tight as Beauty struggled to keep up with her. There before them stood the white tent, on the soft green grass beyond the bridle path. They crossed the beaten earth where so many slaves ran to the tune of paddles every evening but this evening, and slipping inside, Beauty stopped to catch her breath. For a moment, her heart beat too fast, and she knew fear, a new and delicious fear that she had not known in many years, a fear that brought the color to her cheeks and made her smile to herself before she turned to take the measure of her surroundings. There lay the great wooden platter, wondrously wrought with hammered gold leaf, and on it the narrow silken bed on which the maiden would lie, the whole resting on a bier ready to be carried to the ceremonial dais. 6 grooms with gilded masks stood ready to carry the bier when it was ready. Another small cluster of grooms with the gold paint and oil and other adornments waited to go to work. Elena stood by with Alexei and with Dmitri, and there, quite alone it seemed, was Beauty's beloved naked slave, Becca. Becca's glorious flaxen hair had been coiffed exactly like that of Beauty tonight, with ivory combs and opals and pearls, and she stared at Beauty with soft blue eyes, a smile on her coral lips, waiting. How seductive she appeared in her nudity with such elaborately dressed hair. For a moment, Beauty only gazed at her, and the throbbing music rose in her ears, the distant, uneven chorus of song and laughter. "Very well," thought Beauty. "I am going through with it." Quickly, she commenced to remove her violet and silver gown, and at once Rosalind and Elena stepped up to help her with its many fastenings. "Come here, Becca," said the queen, and the girl hurried to stand before her. At once the gown was put over Becca's head and pulled and fastened to fit her easily, if not perfectly. Beauty kicked off her slippers and removed her mask, and Becca received the mask as a groom helped her into the discarded slippers. Now the mask was in place, and Becca stood before Beauty, garbed as Beauty had been garbed, coiffed as Beauty had been coiffed, and masked as Beauty had been masked.
"Perfect," said Rosalind with a long sigh. "Utterly perfect."
"Now remember, don't attempt to imitate my voice," said Beauty. "You won't fool him. Simply take your place beside him and smile. You will do this just as the beer is being brought in, and there won't be time for talk anyway." Becca nodded.
"Yes, Your Majesty."
"She could fool anyone," said Dmitri.
Becca moved back to the far corner of the tent, her disguise complete, and she waited. Only now did Beauty realize that she stood utterly naked and barefoot before her closest friends, her privy council, her most beloved supporters.
"Quick, we should hurry, lest someone come to see if we're delayed," said Alexei,
taking Beauty's hand. He helped her to the long, hard gold platter. Four of the grooms surrounded her and began to rub the gold pigmented oil into her skin. Another groom began to paint her lips gold and her eyelids and her nipples. Beauty closed her eyes. There came back to her the sweetest memory of that long ago night in the hold of the Sultan's ship, when other attendants had performed these same ministrations so reverently. She felt the pins and combs being drawn out of her hair, and the hands busily working on her most secret parts, fingers rubbing the gold into her pubic hair and into the crevice of her bottom. A great throbbing relief weakened her all over, and she felt every fiber of her naked skin, every fiber of her naked soul once more as she'd felt it long ago, for so many days and nights. At last, it was done. She was covered in gold as she had been once before on that strange night. And Alexei and Dmitri lifted her along with the grooms as others gently laid out the bed of silken cushions beneath her. Rosalind gathered up her hair. Elena began to paint her toenails. Now came the final preparations. Dmitri lifted the glistening handfuls of fruit, quartered melons, red cherries, bits of ripe apple, soft slices of fresh peach and plum, and began to put these inside of her. Her sex awakened and throbbed as the fruit was pushed into her. Her clitoris hardened, and she closed her eyes for one precious moment, fighting the rising orgasm that threatened to overcome her. The grooms brushed her hair out over the pillow in waves, sending tingles through her scalp. Alexei held up a glistening date for her to see and then placed it in her navel. All around her, the grooms packed the fresh fruits against her, from her feet to her neck. Garlands of grape leaves were strung through the fruits. Between her legs lay more fruit. She sighed and twisted comfortably on the silk, her vagina deliciously full and gasping, it seemed, gasping as if to devour the fruit inside her. Dmitri held up the small loose cluster of grapes, such glistening purple grapes, and Beauty opened her mouth to receive it, to hold it with her teeth. Suddenly it seemed her breasts would burst with the delicious pressure rolling through her, through all her limbs, through her face. Again, she closed her eyes for one vital second. Then she looked up to see the maiden's mask before her. It was as she had designed it, a light shield of leather with oval eyes, gilded and painted with bright green leaves and purple grapes, like those she held in her teeth. Carefully, Dmitri placed it over her face, smoothing it to fit. And then, lifting her head, he ran the strap around it and positioned the jeweled buckle just behind her left ear. Now she gazed out of the almond-shaped eye openings, and all the world seemed a little less clear, and she seemed a little more safe, and her heart pounded with renewed excitement.
"You are gorgeous to behold," said Alexei.
She knew he wanted to kiss her painted lips, but they were for the king tonight. What more was there to do? The piling of the platter with more polished fruit, more soft ripe fruit, more leaves. A silence fell within the tent. Only the music was audible, the great tantalizing beat of the drums and the high-pitched cry of the horns.
"They are ready."
Again came the fear, the thrilling fear, so secret and so sharp and so exciting. And there came back again the splendor of that long ago night, and how trusting she'd been to the fire burning inside her.
Well, she was trusting now to that fire.
And it burned hot. And as she felt the bier lifted, she knew that she was ready.
And now they are carrying me, naked and gilded and prepared, out under the stars and through the gardens of my own kingdom. And I am queen and slave in one. I am the ruler who has ordained these things, and I am the slave, the abject slave, the devoted slave of all my subjects.
On and on the grooms with their gilded masks moved with the bier. The princes walked beside her, as did her two ladies. And there was Becca. She could see her plainly in beauty's raiment. Becca, now the perfect image of beauty. They had come to the area behind the royal banquet table. She could hear the gasps and exclamations of those who had glanced behind from their chairs above.
"Now go up, my queen," said Alexei to Becca, "and sit beside your husband and smile and say nothing."
A signal had been given. Silence. All music had ceased. Then the drums were beating a cadence. The deep drums, the drums that send their deep-throated voice through your bones. And as the bier came round in front of the royal banquet table, as Beauty looked up at the masked face of the king smiling down, she heard the horns begin and the lutes with them. It was a rhythm of reverence, of expectation. The great bier was carried up onto the dais, and a great loud exclamation came from the crowd as a body. Beauty did not need to see them, as they undoubtedly struggled to see better the great ceremony. A great hush had fallen over the spectators, and only the music spoke now for the crowd. Only the music announcing a moment of supreme importance. Beauty turned ever so slightly on the silken pillow. She looked up at the king who had risen to his feet. His stately masked queen was seated to his right, her head turned slightly towards him. The king stepped up onto the table, and then down onto the planks beneath it and in front of it. He unfastened his great scarlet cloak, and then opened his long tunic and let it fall away from him. His attendants took his boots and took the ceremonial chains from around his neck, and even the handsome bracelets from his arms as he held out his hands. And there he stood, naked except for the gleaming horned mask, his cock hard and ready. Down the carpeted steps he came to the dais that held Beauty. He stood above her, gazing down on her, staring down at this masked maiden who she had become. And now the music became rapid, wild, exhorting and pounding. He dropped down and with his hands caressed Beauty's breasts and kissed the mouth of her sex, kissed it and began to gnaw at it and extract the fruit that filled her. She felt his tongue against her clitoris again and again as he dragged the juicy dripping fruit from her, until at last his tongue searched the cavity for the very last bits and juices, as her desire maddened her and made her toss her head ever so gently, her hands clawing at the silk and the fruit, her eyes closing. But she wanted to see. She wanted to see him. He was above her, his powerful arms like pillars beside her, his eyes glittering behind the mask, his lips curled in the old familiar smile as his cock plunged into her. She sighed and lifted her hips. She could not stop it. In a daze, she saw all the faces above at the royal table. She heard the music pounding on her ears. She heard her own heart throbbing in her ears and her eyelids.
"My beloved, my kingdom, my realm, my soul," the king whispered.
Beauty could scarce control herself, writhing under him, his cock stroking every fiber of her vagina as it plunged again and again. And finally she gave a loud cry as he tossed his hair and closed his eyes and groaned above her. On and on he pumped into her. And then, at last, he was still. A deafening applause rose from the crowd. It rose all around them, and seemed to come in waves from all quarters of the garden, washing over them like water. The king rose to his feet. The applause became a raging chorus of cheers, unending as it drowned out the drums and the horns. She looked up to see Laurent holding up his hands as the cheers grew even louder. It sounded as if the whole realm was cheering, and again the applause broke out, coming in great waves, and the mingled cacophony of music and clapping and voices lulled Beauty into a trance as the shivers of desire continued to wash through her. The king looked down, and then he reached for her hand. She rose up and allowed him to pull her to her feet.
"Our kingdom!"
he roared, and the crowd once more applauded him. He turned to her and said, "Let me take off your mask, beautiful maiden of the kingdom. Let them see the one who has lain here beneath me as the symbol of the realm."
"Are you sure, my lord?" she said. "You want to see me? For if you do, I am more than willing. I am more than willing that they know how much the queen loves them."
He stared at her. That was plain enough, eyes glinting in the eye holes of the mask, his mouth slack with astonishment. "Beauty?" he said.
"Yes, my lord," she said. "For you and for them, I am the kingdom." What did he think? What would he say? What was going on behind the ornate and shimmering mask? Then came the smile, the slow, easy smile, the great smile, the beloved smile. She lifted her hand to her mask, and he lifted his hands to assist her, pulling it loose from her and casting it aside and holding up her hand in his.
"My queen!" he called out. "The eternal maiden of the kingdom, Beauty, my queen, queen of my heart, Queen Beauty of Bellavolten."
It was madness, sweet madness. In all directions, Beauty saw the dancers leaping in the air, clapping, the naked slaves jumping up and down like children, the torches blazing as the voices came louder and fuller and all the more jubilant with unstinting praise. Alexei and Rosalind and Elena were dancing before them, Alexei clapping his hands wildly over his head. From left to right, Beauty looked. And behind her, at the smiling figure of Becca above, and before her. The captain of the guard was on his knees looking at her with upraised hands. And Princess Lucinda was there in her unmistakable gray velvet, waving her hands as she danced. Tristan and Roger and Richard were waving with both arms as they swayed back and forth. The five naked disciples of the mask were brought forward by Prince Dimitri and stood with their heads bowed, waiting to be given over to their 6 months of irrevocable bondage. In a frenzy, the crowd danced around them, closing in on them and then backing away from them, and then dancing near to them again, clapping and cheering, and then again raising their hands, countless hands, hands wherever one looked, to the king and queen. Solemnly, the king gestured to each of the humble supplicants, and then with his open hand to Dimitri, who might now take them away. Beauty nodded, raising her right hand in blessing as well. As the five were led away, Beauty saw Dimitri looking back from the midst of the frenzy. On and on went the dancing and cheering, and the drums thundered and the pipes broke into a wild dance. Suddenly, right before her, she saw her beloved Bren and Sybil. They were leaping with their arms raised, and Bren shouted, "Beauty's kingdom!" "Beauty's kingdom!"
sang out Sybil in a high-pitched, jubilant voice.
"Beauty's kingdom!"
they sang together. Lovely Princess Blanche was also dancing before the dais, and with her the pretty slaves Penryn and Valentine, and countless others, all singing out Beauty's Kingdom over and over again.
"Beauty's Kingdom!" cried Laurent.
He held up Beauty's hand with his. He swayed in the dance, both arms raised, his right hand clasping her left hand.
"Beauty's Kingdom!"
he cried again, and the cry was taken up all around.
"Beauty's Kingdom!"
From everywhere, voices echoed it and repeated it until it became a roaring chant.
"Beauty's Kingdom."
"And I am your sovereign," Beauty thought as she looked out over the endless wilderness of happy subjects, naked and clothed, unmasked and masked. "And I am naked before you because I choose to be. And yes, I am the kingdom. I am you all. I will serve you always. I will give you all, demand what you will, need what you will. This is my destiny, my submission, my true surrender." We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Beauty's Kingdom by Anne Rice, writing as A.N. Rokolar. This program was directed by Danny Campbell and Kelly Gilday. Executive producer, Kelly Gilday. Text copyright 2015 by Anne O'Brien Rice. Production copyright 2015, Penguin Random House Audio. A member of Penguin Group USA LLC. A Penguin Random House company. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.